One of the brilliant things is that you can go into a health food store, and in some cases, even into grocery stores, and you can find like whole shelves full of herbal products.
Welcome to The Genius of Wellness, a podcast brought to you by Hopkins Medical Group, serving patients in Greater Boston with a personalized approach to healthcare, both in person and through telemedicine. Learn more and schedule an appointment at thegeniusofwellness.org.
Welcome, everyone, to Hopkins Medical Group podcast. We continue to provide this service. We've been doing it since the beginning of the pandemic and hope that you have been joining us on a monthly basis. Over the summer, we have revised our protocol so that we're taking a little bit of a break, but we're really excited about what we've been working on over the summer. The summer hasn't been a time for sun and surf, but rather Dr. Roberts and Lizzie Ferdemer, our nurse nutritionists, have been diving into not the ocean, but herbs. And today they're going to bring us an update on what they've been doing, how they're introducing it into our practice, and they will also be introducing Dr. Sarah Wayland, who is Dr. Roberts' sister.
At Hopkins Medical Group, we are happy to now be offering through Dr. Steve Roberts herbal consultations for patients who are interested in a more nuanced, highly personalized approach to choosing the herbs that may benefit their specific condition, whether that's a diagnosed medical illness or just wanting to feel better, have more energy, have better immunity, less fatigue.
I thought it would be a great opportunity for patients who ask me where I get my information from to make sure that they had a chance to hear from one of the main sources. You know, my sister has been someone who I pick her brain almost on a weekly basis to discuss things that I might be able to do or offer to patients, as she has a wealth of knowledge in areas of medicine and health. And I generally look up to her with a lot of what she can offer me.
If you don't mind a little more family laundry coming out, the two of you grew up in a pharmaceutical chemist's home. So your dad was a long-term chemical chemist at
Roche.
So you grew up in a science world where discussions, I imagine dad came home and talked about the last chemical he was trying to modulate. So clearly you were exposed to the world of intervention with therapeutics, namely from the pharmaceutical. And here you both are 30 years later on the side of herbs and natural medicine. Sarah, tell us a little bit about how you made the leap from business into the medicine of herbs and now your current practice.
Thanks, Pat. It's great to be with all of you. I love talking about herbs. We had this backdrop of a father who was a research chemist at Hoffman La Roche. The other kind of important ingredient there is our mother is an avid gardener. And so we grew up with plants and herbs all around us all the time. So we sort of had that sort of combination of the science of making pharmaceuticals, but then also this mother who was very enthusiastic. And we had herbs all around us all the time growing up. So it just seemed very kind of comfortable and normal. And in my case, I actually had a growing interest in natural medicine. And I think it was a couple of different experiences along the way that kind of piqued my curiosity. But probably the strongest one was my husband had some real health challenges after living in Russia for a few years. And he just kind of bounced around the medical system and wasn't finding the answers that he needed in order to get his vitality back. And so he found his way to a naturopath. And then when I started dating him and then we got married, it was kind of a theme in our marriage of looking for ways, and often it involved natural medicines and herbs. And so what started as a sort of general interest turned into a real passion. And then that led to a lot of steps in between, but ultimately a move over to the UK to study herbs in London.
And so now you are ostensibly a full-time instructor, professor of natural medicine. You've been embraced by the medical community in the UK, which I think is commendable. And hopefully at some point we'll see that journey take place here. Steve, delve a little bit into the history of pharmaceuticals as they extended out of herbal medicine. Most of the drugs, including rapamycin, digitalis, aspirin, go down the line. Those are all direct extractions from the natural world.
If you were to look at the early 1900s and you looked at the materia medica of doctors in the United States, the vast majority of what we had available to us were plants. that began to change very rapidly when pharmaceutical companies began to become much more prominent, became much more powerful, both in a legislative capacity, but also in their manufacturing and science-based capacity, in their ability to develop drugs. Unfortunately, with the advances of that, which there are some wonderful things we have as a result of those drugs and some great ways we can treat medicines, we lost something that was actually really valuable at the same time. The medical education system pretty much totally left behind any of that natural thinking and any of the herbs. And it wasn't because they weren't useful and that they weren't effective. It's because it wasn't the in vogue thing at the time and the thing that had the dominant say in how medical education was given to doctors. So much so that by the time of the 1960s, I think there were only two herbs that were even in the PDR, the physician desk reference manual. And I actually don't know what the other one is, but witch hazel, which is commonly used for hemorrhoids, was one of them.
I think it's something that certainly I have struggled with and been able to bridge in my view of herbal medicine. And as we integrate it into our practice, Leslie, yours and mine, we've focused on over the past decade, nutrition, gut. We've been using bacteria, we're using all of these, and oftentimes Leslie has become the SIBO expert in the practice, and we come in with herbs as a long-term therapeutic option. And one thing that I think has opened the door to my mind and acceptance is that in extracting the pharmaceutical-grade molecule, we lose what nature put in place in the complexity of it within the herbal basis of its use. So when you're using oregano from oregano, you're not necessarily benefiting from the oil extraction or the pharmaceutical extraction. So maybe chat a little bit about that.
Before I studied herbs, one of the ways that I came to be interested in that was as she shared some of the stories of these herbs. Two of the herbs that come to mind for me are willow and meadowsweet, the value and the virtues of those plants and how they actually differ. Because I think in medical school, I was taught that these are the herbs that aspirin comes from, and that's what they are good for. They are good for the salicylic acid that is inside of them, and that's the active ingredient. And we don't really need to know about the rest of it, but it's the aspirin that's good.
We use supplements that have a standardized extract. And now what we're trying to offer patients, the difference with Steve now doing herbal consults that give tinctures, that yes, we can give you a standardized extract and it's very effective and it helps, but there's a subset of patients who perhaps have tried those extracts, doesn't work that well, and maybe using the whole plant.
I love this discussion. I think you're kind of getting to the heart of the matter here. When we're thinking about using herbs or herbal medicine, one of the brilliant things about working with herbs is that most often in nature, the herbs kind of come packaged with a number of different what we call constituents or chemical components to the plant that both have the effective action that we're looking for. So Steve brought up the example of aspirin. You've learned in medical school that the active ingredient in aspirin is that salicylic acid, right? So we know that that's the active ingredient. But the brilliance of the herbs is that one of the drawbacks to that particular constituent is that it can cause some significant irritation in the lining of the stomach. We know that if people take aspirin over long periods of time, then we have to be careful about things like bleeding in the stomach or irritation of the lining of the stomach. So one of the beautiful things about these herbs, and meadowsweet is one that Steve mentioned, is that it has other constituents within the whole plant that actually protect the lining of the stomach. And so it's such a beautiful example of how nature actually provides all the things that are needed in order to answer any of the potential side effects that can come across from some of these active ingredients, or if we're talking about just extracting one particular chemical or constituent, which is often what happens in the pharmaceutical world.
So one term I use a lot is adaptogenic. And when I tell people about herbs and using them in our practice, the value of it is they know where they need to go.
Adaptogens are a brilliant whole family of herbs. And adaptogens are actually there to help support the body systems and almost every system of the body. to help it to function better. Some classes of herbs have this real intelligence where they know what is needed in the person's system. So for instance, if someone is a little sluggish in a certain area, the herbs know when things need to be stimulated or sort of ramped up, versus we might have another system that's already operating at too high of an oscillation and we need to kind of bring it down. And there is a wisdom to many herbs where they just know what to do. Another word that we might introduce into this conversation is called amphoterics. And amphoteric herbs have this ability to know when a system needs this very action, where either the system needs a little more stimulation, or maybe the system's looking more for balance. And so we're not trying to rev up the system, or we're not trying to sort of suppress or relax the system. It might just be a matter of finding that sort of sweet spot where the person is really in this nice harmonious balance. And so that's one of the beautiful things about some of the herbs that we use, is that they have this innate intelligence.
This is one of the challenges I find in speaking to other doctors about herbs sometimes. When I tell them, like, I would consider using this herb for someone who has high blood pressure, they like to think of it as, oh, that's a herb that you use for hypertension patients. Whereas the truth is, as Sarah was mentioning, herbs have this different effect. They're not concentrated chemical that drives the body to work in a certain way. Sometimes what they're doing is they're restoring the body's ability to self-regulate. And so they might actually have what's maybe more appropriate to describe as a blood pressure normalizing effect. In that same way, it might be able to help increase someone's blood pressure, or it might help to lower someone's blood pressure, but it helps them to restore the natural balance and homeostasis that their body needs to exist in.
I was wondering if you could also educate our listeners a little bit about other aspects of herbs, including things like the doctrine of signatures, or just the overall energy of a plant and how you might match that plant to a particular person.
Leslie, that's a really massive subject that you just brought up. Which is great. It actually is sort of a guiding principle. If we look at all the ancient traditions where a lot of this herbal wisdom comes from. So I'm talking here about Ayurvedic medicine that comes from India, or if we're talking about Chinese medicine out of China, or in our Western tradition, we have our own sort of systems of working with herbs. But the thing that they all have in common is that they have this beautifully, a little bit complex way of working with a person's individual constitution and an understanding that each person is very unique in the way that their physiology works and in the way that their system operates. And so they take that into consideration, and that's almost the most important part when you're working with herbs, is to understand that each person is very individual, and the way that you want to approach helping that person to restore balance and vitality and wellness would take that first into consideration. And then secondly, each herb has its own energetic profile. Maybe a good example of this would be something like mint. And when most people take mint, it has a sort of cooling effect on the system. Right now we're in the middle of summer, and I know that you guys, where you are in the United States, have experienced some very hot temperatures. Mint is an amazing herb that can help cool the whole system down. So I don't mean necessarily that when you take the temperature of someone and then they might ingest some mint and you take their temperature again, that on the thermometer, it's actually going to show up as, you know, a lower number. We're talking about an internal feeling that the person has. So their whole system just starts to cool down. Another example that might be familiar to your listeners would be ginger. Ginger is a really common spice and plant. It's actually a rhizome that we use in our cooking, and it's something that probably most people have experience with. For most people, when they ingest fresh ginger, it has a real warming or heating effect on their body. If you want to dial it up a notch and you want to see the difference of what I'm talking about, a good experience is to work with fresh ginger first. So whether you eat it straight or you make a tea of the fresh ginger, and then you take some powdered ginger. Take a teaspoon of powdered ginger, add that to some boiling water, and make a strong tea from that, and see if you notice a difference, because the dried ginger is much more heating in your body than the fresh ginger for most people. The reason I bring up these examples is because I think that they're things that we're familiar enough with that we can start to understand what these ancient traditions understood so well, which is that these herbs have some qualities to them that you can call on or draw on when you're looking to help a person find balance or restore balance to their health. One example that I like to use when we're teaching this principle, and that is using the example of Winnie the Pooh. In Western herbal tradition, we use the four humors as a way of identifying some unique differences between people. In the four humor system, we use choleric, sanguine, melancholic, and phlegmatic. Those are the four categories. So like a melancholic example would be Eeyore. Eeyore was a very melancholic character, so he kind of had this slow, sluggish, a little bit depressed, a little bit pessimistic about life. And then if we're going to talk about someone who's more sanguine, then we're thinking of someone like Tigger. You know, Tigger was very bouncy, very happy-go-lucky, approachable, very optimistic. So they're almost like opposites of one another. And someone that has a really sanguine type personality, their physiological state would be informed by that. So their physiological state might be that they tend to run a little warm. They like to be in hot conditions, and that their systems can dry out really easily. And so we want to use herbs that might have an action that would either help to calm that down or maybe even to raise it up if the person is really sort of losing their sanguineness. A herb that a lot of people are familiar with is called hops. Hops is something that we use to make beer, but it's also known to be used for insomnia. Someone that has a melancholic disposition, we wouldn't want to use hops with a person like that because hops has a lot of those similar principles or properties. So it cools the system. It slows it down. And so someone who already has that in their system, you can imagine why using a herb like that is just going to further push them in that direction.
So maybe you could help us with the battle of the thermostat at the house with air conditioning.
Right.
Which is, I'm always going, turn it up. So we literally have the battle of the thermostat. I leave a room, he turns it down. I come back in the room, he goes, you turned it back up again.
For someone who tends to run hot, you know, we would be thinking about herbs that can help to cool the system a bit, generally speaking. For someone that tends to run a little more cool, then we would most often want to use some herbs that would help to stimulate or add some fire to the system, potentially. The way that herbalists are trained is to look at the person. So the most important thing is that you're assessing the person first, and then you allow the sort of disease process or the imbalance or the pathology, that comes in second. So we consider those things, but the first thing is that we want to understand the person. So rather than treating the disease or the symptom, we're looking primarily at restoring balance for this person's constitution.
So one of us gets a beer and the other one gets a mojito.
I want to just piggyback off of what Sarah said, just because I actually think it's such an important point, because doctors and a lot of people in the medical community think about patients in almost the exact, it's not that it's necessarily wrong, but they come at patient care from almost the exact opposite direction, where people come in, they say they have insomnia, or they say, I have joint pain, and we put them all on a sleep aid, or we put them all on an NSAID anti-inflammatory. And we don't really discriminate based off of some of the different features of what their joint pain might be. When I talk to other medical providers, it presents a little bit of a challenge because they try and, when they want to branch into using herbs, they try and use them like a drug. They try and say, oh, you have joint pain, let me give you turmeric. Or you have insomnia, so you should go on valerian. And they put everyone who has insomnia on valerian and everyone who has joint pain on turmeric. If someone has a very dry disposition, whether it's their skin or other features, they have a lot of constipation and they have joint pain, turmeric may not be the right thing to use for them. There's a lot more nuance that you might have to apply when you're selecting the right herb for the right patient.
I think that's an excellent point. One of the brilliant things is that you can go into a health food store, and in some cases, even into grocery stores, and you can find like whole shelves full of herbal products. Many of them are extracts, so that they might have taken a herb and actually extracted a sort of chemical constituent from it. So that's very similar to the pharmaceutical approach. You know, I'm very grateful that we have some of those really powerful medicines, but we miss out on the sort of nuanced beauty that you can have with herbs. We might have 20 different herbs that have an anti-inflammatory effect, but most herbs have multiple actions. In fact, all herbs do. And so there might be a herb that has an anti-inflammatory effect and also has a heart protective effect. So if you had someone coming in to see you that has a certain disposition and in their history or in their family history maybe has some cardiovascular health issues, then that would be a beautiful herb to use with that particular person. When you have the ability to dispense herbs and formulate your own formulas, then you can really customize what's going to be the best thing for this person.
So far, all of the patients that have consulted Steve for a herbal concoction because of the complexity of the people that we have with autoimmune diseases. We take care of people with long-term infectious diseases, whether it's mono or Lyme, or even now COVID, that we really need to look at the complexity of the landscape. And again, not rely and have that switch go off in our brain that is, oh, your joints hurt. Here, turmeric is great for you. Because in fact, the path to that joint pain is so numerous, the numerous paths leading there, that we cannot apply that switch theory.
We are going to be doing a follow-up podcast to this one, addressing in detail more about what personalized consultations with Dr. Roberts entail. So we invite you to stay tuned to hear that in the next few weeks.
So thank you, everyone, Leslie, for providing nutrition guidance and healing, introducing light therapy to our practice. And I want to thank Steve for hanging in there for all these years and finding his way for his feet to land and become our in-house herbalist. And to Sarah for all the guidance you have given your brother and inspiring him to stay with it, even though we are across the pond. We welcome you at any time to visit us and consult with patients and consult with us. So thank you all for being here, and we look forward to the next podcast. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.